Welcome to Inside the Press Box, the podcast where we dive into the captivating world of sporting journalism. I'm Josh Walters.
And I'm Jack O'Neill. Each week we'll bring you insider perspectives for the most engaged journalists within the UK.
So if you're ready to go beyond the scorelines and explore the fascinating world of sport journalism, join us in the exciting journey and get ready to stop Inside the Press Box.
Hello and welcome back to Inside the Press Box. My name's Jack O'Neill. I'm joined with Josh Walters and Ollie Gray as usual. How are you, lads?
Good, thank you.
Not too bad.
And on today's episode, we've got Richard Fiddler. How are you, Rich?
Good, thank you. Good to see you guys.
Good. All right, so firstly, just tell us a bit about your work, really. What sort of field of journalism are you in?
Okay, I'm currently deputy features editor at the Yorkshire Post, so it's an interim position until pretty much the end of the year, covering maternity leave. Prior to that, I've been acting as a freelance journalist, and I kind of started off as a sports reporter at the Star in early about 2010, and then became night editor at the Star. For a couple of years, but then in between times I've worked in PR before kind of finding myself back in journalism over the last 12 months or so.
That's good. So what sort of, because I'm right in saying that you originally started out as a footballer, didn't you? So what sort of made you go from that transition of being a footballer to still staying in sport but wanting to go into your writing and PR and stuff?
Yeah, it was quite a sort of circuitous route, really. When I was really little, I used to write match reports on either games that I'd kind of been to or just kind of made up ones. Like I'm talking like, you know, 7-8 years of age. Always kind of did it. And I always like had a sort of a, probably didn't realise it at the time, but a passion for the media. Growing up, I'd always read the papers. I'd always sort of take an interest in stories and reading sort of particularly sports features and stuff like that, but never considered it a career. Like it was always football, just wanted to be a footballer from as early as I can kind of remember. So I was lucky enough to kind of do that. Went through sort of the system, signing schoolboy forms, but I suppose looking back, the crunch point came really at 16. So instead of doing a YTS, which would probably be considered like the academy route now, going full time, I did my A levels. And then when I did go pro after my A levels for that year at Leeds and then Hull, I got released at the end of that season. But because I had my A levels, I was able to go back to the university offers that I'd kind of had. One of which was Sheffield Hallam to do a course called Recreation Management, which I only did because my brother had done it, basically. You know, I like I said, I didn't have any intentions of going to university, but I'd applied for it, I'd got on it, and it sounded quite fun. You know, variety of different sporting things, sports development, physio, that kind of stuff. But in the second year, we had to do a 10-week work placement in industry, and I ended up joining a company that had only recently formed. They were a kind of a PR firm, but they were involved with quite a few sporting things. They worked with the Sharks basketball team. They had good links with a company called Westfield Health, which you probably see at United and at Hillsborough and at New York as well. They sponsored like the disabled facilities and were quite big in sort of into sport. So they were their kind of like their biggest client. And I just found that I really, really enjoyed kind of writing and communicating. And I ended up working pretty much all the way through my third year there and starting the job, you know, once I'd kind of graduated. And the kind of the big sort of leap came when the Sheffield Telegraph asked me to write basketball stuff, you know, reports, previews, because Westfield was sponsoring the Sharks. So I was writing them kind of as a journalist, but with a bit of a PR kind of hat on as well. And then I kind of started getting my name in the paper. And you just get that bug then that you sort of, you feel that you're doing something. You think it's important, and it is important, but you know, it's not sort of like splitting the atom or anything like that. But it's a great sort of little buzz, and you know, getting free tickets to stuff. And really from there, it kind of mushroomed through basketball in essence. And so, yeah, that was kind of how I got my foot in the door.
So with, obviously you playing professional football at the start, do you think that's essentially given you any, like, not guidance, but like obviously some journalists just go straight into journalism instead of playing sports? Do you reckon that's given you a certain edge to be able to get into it, know how to reach out to people, being as you were playing professional football at that one point?
I think it did, particularly at the start, definitely. I'll be honest, I've never been asked that question before. I think it's a really good one. It did, because I felt like I never sort of shouted about the football side of it, because I always felt like I'd never gone far enough to kind of really sort of, you know, kind of talk about it too much. It ended in failure at a relatively kind of young age on a professional level anyway. But the thing is that all sports people kind of, I suppose from the point that I kind of came out of professional sport, I've all had to have the same experience as what I had. Kind of, you know, the dream of doing it, the juggling of schoolwork and friends and family commitments with training and games, the kind of the highs and the lows. And I sort of felt that it gave me a very good insight into kind of what they were going through. And I always kind of felt I could report on people from a more sort of understanding perspective, rather than just they didn't perform very well today or the result was like this. And I kind of graduated a lot towards like individual sports. So I got involved with athletics quite a lot, followed cycling quite closely, and became good kind of contacts of people that had obviously had to work very, very hard to get the breakthroughs that they did. And one of those was Jess Ennis. So I got sent to interview her when she was still at King Egbert's as a lower six student. And so just something about her, I mean, obviously now it's fairly obvious that she's going to be an amazing athlete, but something about her, like she was tiny, working really, really kind of hard, but was nowhere near, you could just tell she was nowhere near her potential. And you kind of thought, well, if she's like fourth, fifth best junior in the world, like training two or three times a week, how good will she be when she turns full time? So we just kind of started following her. And then that ended up leading on to the fact that the job that I got at the Star had a ticket to the Olympics, which I kind of went to. And that really sort of put me on the map as a journalist, really.
Yeah, because I guess with being in sports in any way, shape or form, that's always going to give you that little bit of understanding compared to someone that hasn't. Because like even on a game day, if you're doing like a match report, you can think, oh, they might not have had a good game due to this reason in the warm-ups or and stuff like that. Whereas a journalist who's never been pro doesn't really know that. So you can provide that insight, which gives you, I guess, a unique selling point.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the sort of the front that players and managers will kind of put on is obviously massively different to what you see behind the scenes. I think it's quite interesting watching the sort of the documentaries on Amazon and Netflix and stuff like that, which is still a bit sanitized. You know, obviously they know the cameras are there, but seeing how the managers kind of talk to the players behind the scenes is often completely different to how they come out and you know, interview afterwards.
Yeah.
So you kind of understand a little bit more about, how a player of a certain kind of experience would be approaching a game. And that although they may be, you know, very sort of talented as a 19, 20-year-old, within the kind of hierarchy of the dressing room or within the club, you know, they'll still be quite sort of low down in terms of that. And then some of the players that you think of that maybe not as loved by the fans, but actually within the dressing room, you can sort of tell that they would be sort of leaders within there. Mm. So it just gives you that sort of insight of the different characters that, you know, players, they're easily caricatured as by fans as being sort of, you know, charismatic or whatever. But sometimes their persona on the pitch is completely different to how they'll be kind of behind the scenes. Their role on the pitch is different to what it's like behind the scenes. And it's a bit easier to sort of, initially, I knew quite a lot of the players and had been around them and sort of knew people who knew them as well. So that's why I say initially it was a lot easier. And it gave that bit more kind of colour to the writing that would be difficult to kind of do unless you've actually sort of been through it.
So you say you've had, you know, throughout all your career, you've had all these opportunities, different sports and everything. What would you say has been your most exciting opportunity or the one that you enjoyed the most out of the lot?
It's got to be the Olympics.
What year was that one? What year Olympics was that one?
2012. So to me, it's like 5 minutes ago, but you guys were what, six, seven at the time? Something like that.
Not that old, about seven.
Maybe not even that old. No, that's scary. But yeah, the 2012 games was just crazy. Because like the Olympics really was always the big thing for, you know, people my generation, 47 now. So early kind of 90s when Sky started broadcasting more football. But it was still not kind of mainstream that, you know, everybody kind of had Sky and could just watch whatever you kind of wanted. So big events like Olympics or Test matches or World Cups really were kind of your only kind of window into a lot of sports. It was the only time that you'd kind of sort of see them. And I used to absolutely adore watching the Olympics, you know, through the 90s, sort of into the early 2000s. And I think the last Olympics before the London one in Great Britain was like 1940s or something. So it weren't in really in living memory as such. So it was always going to be kind of a big deal. And the fact that Sheffield was kind of at the heart of a lot of the teams, there was a load of sporting organisations based in Sheffield at the time, like volleyball, boxing, a lot of the athletes, swimming, divers, you know, they're all kind of there. And my sort of role was really to follow local athletes, as you know, born within South Yorkshire, but also those who were kind of training here. So it gave me opportunities to chat to loads and loads of people and then kind of plan my 2 or 3 weeks down in London and follow those through. Jess was obviously like the big one, because Sheffield born and bred, face of the games, all that kind of thing. But it did give me the opportunity to sort of follow, you know, people like the Great Britain hockey captain from Doncaster, you know, so you go to the hockey games and there were loads of swimmers, loads of divers, not as many athletes that was kind of as high profile as Jess, but still quite a few that were competing. Volleyball as well, based here. So it was quite good because you got to know them and that gave you really good access. And as the game sort of started, it was like a massive buzz around them, but it was only really when it kind of got going that the whole country got behind it. And again, then you become almost like the eyes and ears for loads of people on the scene. For me, the best bit that I kind of had was I was there sort of 2 or 3 days before they started. And I didn't get blasé going there every single day, but obviously, you know, it gets a bit sort of more normal. But everybody that sort of was coming day after day after day, it was their sort of one day there. It was their sort of highlight of the Olympics. So every day was almost kind of like the first day at kind of a festival or, you know, at a big wedding or a big party where everyone's just there. No kind of ulterior motive. They just kind of wanted to have fun, enjoy it, soak it all up, look at it with sort of fresh eyes. And it just had this, you know, really lovely feel around it. So quite aside from like the working side, which as a sports journalist is going to be the pinnacle, from a sort of a human side as well, it was absolutely amazing. And I don't think I would ever be able to replicate that, because if I went to another Olympics, it probably wouldn't be in Britain for one, which would make it different. It wouldn't be sort of our people kind of there enjoying it as, and understanding kind of the communities that, you know, we've kind of grown up in. It'd always be somebody else's games. And also, because you've done one, it's natural to kind of compare it between the two. So, not only was it sort of the highlight, but I don't think I'd ever beat it anyway, which is a bit of a depressing thought, really. But
so that was obviously like one of your favorite moments or stuff like that. What would you say is like your like favorite thing or the most thing you're grateful for in terms of like learning from being in the industry for so long? What would you say is like the best thing you've learned just around that type of area?
Probably two things that sort of lead on to each other. So through the basketball, I got involved with the British Basketball League. And that involved doing a lot of stuff for their website in terms of match previews and then match reports. So kind of looking back on it now, it's a bit sort of weird. But one night of the weekend, it was never every Friday or every Saturday, every Sunday, sort of alternated. I'd be kind of sat at home taking match reports or updates from the games. So it could be up to sort of five games. And someone would either text or call and say, Sharks are 20-14 down at London after first quarter. They give me a bit of detail. And then I'd have to write up four or five reports, put it into kind of a newsletter format, put it on the website, send it out to the media. And it kind of taught me, one, to be able to sort of just write quickly and succinctly and almost use my imagination a little bit. So sounds daft because normally you report on stuff that you see. But if you get into the habit of kind of just reporting through the information that you're given, when you actually are at an event and you can see it, you know, it is literally like, you know, the blindfold's been taken away. You sort of, you've got all the details there to the front of you, but you've already got the picture of, in your mind, how you would report a story. So that was a really good kind of grounding that I was able to sort of learn how to write quickly with very little detail, but still have to provide a bit of colour for people. And then when I was at the Olympics, funnily enough, I bumped into a guy who was also part of the basketball community, who had a sports reporting agency, and he asked me to start doing football games. And it wasn't straightforward. It was three or four reports. So I get my sort of instructions on the Friday. We need 300 words for the Daily Mirror, 200 words for the Daily Star, 150 for the Times. And then you might get one dropped on you sort of Saturday morning, Observer on Sunday, want 400 words on the Whistle, et cetera, et cetera. So again, it was very much bulk writing where you've got one game, the story is pretty much the same, but you're kind of writing it in two or three different ways and, you know, for different audiences as well. And you need quotes from the managers, or it might be a player, or you might write for a Sunday paper, it might be the Mondays. And it taught me a lot how to be, in effect, how to be kind of a proper journalist in many ways, because the stuff that you might get for a Sunday, you wouldn't use, the stuff that you got for the Monday papers, you wouldn't use on a Sunday. There's kind of like this unwritten agreement that all the Monday writers would use this particular line and the Sunday ones would use that one. If you kind of broke that convention, you know, you weren't very kind of popular with the other people because, that's kind of their living as well. So that was like a really kind of hard school in terms of how to write stuff. And when you kind of break it down, you can then understand a lot more about how you're going to approach your game. So if I get sent to a game this Saturday and it's, you know, Wednesday versus West Brom, I've already in my mind, a picture is forming of the outcomes of that game. You know, where are the teams in the league? What's the main sort of story? There can only be three results, home, win, away, win, or a draw, but they can be reached in many, many different ways. So it's kind of thinking about all these sorts of things. What happens if the last minute goal for West Brom? What happens if the last minute goal for Wednesday? What would it mean? Is it a point? Is it a winner? So it doesn't then catch you on the hop. There's still, you know, it's still obviously things that kind of you've never seen before at a game, but it shouldn't kind of catch you on the hop with how it's kind of reported. And really, it's just that, I suppose, that repetition and the many, many different kind of same sport, same games, but, you know, the different teams playing, different outcomes. You just build up this kind of muscle memory where, you know, you can go to a game and you think, right, okay, I know how to cope with two injury time goals. I've seen it before. I know what kind of happens. And I know in my mind, I would kind of write it. So I think doing those basketball ones sat on my sofa, you know, all them years ago, probably helped me far more than what I thought at the time. And, you know, just doing it at the time, just for some money, you know, just helpful. But it probably actually helped me become a much better writer across the board.
Supposing that sort of like in sports writing, there's never really a guarantee on, or you can't really predict how much weight you're actually going to get. Because obviously we had it last year where we had to go out and do his own match reports and everything like that. But you look around at other people's work. So for instance, like Paul Davis, who writes for Rotherham Games and everything, you obviously set out with his match reports and stuff like that. But it also, I suppose from those match reports, it always breaks off into its own little separate stories, doesn't it? So it'd be like, I don't know, an injury update or something, but it all stems sort of, there's a lot of work what stems from just that match report, what you also get told to break off into those other little stories as well.
I know Paul really well. Like, I work with him at the Star, and he's a good mate and an excellent writer, really, really good writer.
Yeah.
And the kind of role that he has at the Advertiser, for instance, he's got to take every single piece of information that he kind of gets and almost like make a story out of it. You know, two different sides to that. One, he's got space to fill. He's got, you know, got a certain amount of space in the newspaper to fill and, you know, keep things coming up to date online. But the other side is he knows what a privileged position he's kind of in. He's a fan, you know, he's a Rotherham United fan.
Yep.
He writes from the heart. And I think he realises that he's got to be the eyes and ears of the supporters. Now, it's tricky to do because local journalists often get criticised for not being too critical of the club because you have to sort of maintain your sources and not kind of burn your bridges with players or managers or administrators. So you're always kind of sort of playing it a little bit safe at times. But some of the stories that he'll kind of put together are probably based on conversations that have took place maybe a month, 6 weeks ago. He'll try and piece things together. You know, when a manager gets changed, for instance, he'll try and sort of piece things together on comments that he might have had from people that may have kind of led up to it. Again, it's very rare that something major will kind of happen just with no prior warning. You know, Liam Richardson was always going to be on a sort of a bit of a tightrope. Was he the man that was going to take him back up? At what point does somebody else come in? At what point do they kind of back him? That kind of thing. So again, with his experience, Paul will be able to kind of, you know, work out, have a few off the record conversations, et cetera, et cetera. You know, who might be thinking of coming in, you know, talking to Steve Evans, obviously he would know him. And because he would have the trust of people, he'd be able to get to people, you know, relatively early. But even then, you know, football clubs are quite weird places where stuff happens that you'd like to think is really well organised, but it isn't. And often, like, going behind the sort of the curtain of your favourite football club is quite a distressing experience.
Yeah, I was going to say, going back on to that, having to tread lightly sort of with your work and the questions you ask. I remember last time Steve Evans was my manager, I think he actually banned Paul from training ground
for
I think, like 8 weeks or something daft like that. But
yeah,
I don't know what that went down to, but
it's more like, and sometimes newspapers do it. It's almost like make a point. for things. They know when they're going to cross the line. They know at which point the club's going to get, you know, throw the teddies out of the pram. But they also kind of know that they need the oxygen of the sort of the independent journalist. They've got all the club channels and everything. But if a team's not doing particularly well, getting out that kind of constant, the lads are working hard message is, you know, it grates on the fans after a while. And that's when the sort of the independent journalist can be seen to be a bit more still kind of critical, but almost like a critical friend.
So I know you said that you got into your writing quite young. What would your best piece of advice be if you're in them shoes as a like completely fresh new student doing journalism? As in
New university or your guy's age?
Yeah.
I don't think there's any substitution in terms of doing as much as you can, as much work as you can, and not being afraid to take on any particular sort of, you know, role or opportunity. Now you can't be daft. You can't sort of like start reporting on some random team that maybe sort of 50, 60 miles away from your house that's going to cost you a fortune to get there for, you know, and they're not paying you and stuff like that. But within your own kind of means, do as much as you possibly can, make as many contacts as you possibly can, experience as many different sports, talk to as many different people. And I heard a saying the other day for the first time, which I think is really, really good. People often overestimate what they can do within a year, but always underestimate what they can do in 10 years. Now, 10 years obviously sounds a very, very long time, but what are you like now, 20?
21, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, you barely be kind of 30 in 10 years' time. So since I was 30, I've done so much. I don't mean that in kind of so much in a sort of, you know, success type ways or, you know, things like that, a retired type of thing. Just in terms of the amount I've kind of crammed in since I was 30, it's just absolutely phenomenal. You've got a long, long career in front of you. And it'll always feel like you're sort of rushing in some ways to kind of, you know, compete with somebody that's got, you know, onto the first rung of the ladder. But as long as you're putting the work in and making the contacts and doing the right process, you will, you know, things will happen. Things will kind of happen. And they'll happen kind of almost like when you're at the point of thinking you're going to kind of give up in some ways. But you'll push so kind of hard that you become very obvious as a candidate for somebody because you'll have that much experience. And sometimes you get your first kind of break when you're overqualified for something. And then you don't kind of realise that that's a break. You think, well, why am I taking this? Because, you know, I've done this. You know, I've been doing this for ages. It feels like a step back, but it might be a paid job. It might be a sort of full-time sort of role. It might be something you're not kind of considered before. But then that'll lead on to something else. So I think main bit of advice would be is constantly be kind of working, constantly be doing stuff. You've got the means to do things that previous generations didn't have. Like you can publish your own work. You know, you've got the ability to sort of start a website up, write your own match reports, even if you're not reporting for somebody. You can build up a body of work through things like this, through just chatting to each other, you know, like this podcast, you know, talking to each other on a weekly basis. It will get better week after week after week. You know, you might decide to then buy new microphones or you speak to a different guest or you interview members of the public. You know, things will kind of change. You get a webcam, that kind of thing, you know, stuff will sort of progress. And I think it's only then when you kind of look back that you realise how far you've actually come over that span of time. And whether you then think that's a short period of time or a long period of time, that's kind of up to you. But you will make progress and you will sort of build up contacts that, again, you'll not kind of realise about that you've got, that all of a sudden will become useful.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on another exhilarating episode of Inside the Press Box. I've been Jack O'Neill, and I've had the pleasure of guiding you through the exciting world of sports journalism alongside Josh Walters.
As we say goodbye to another thrilling episode, we invite you to join us again next week, when we will continue to provide you with more insightful information with more exciting guests.
Until then, keep your eyes on the game, ears to the speakers, and remember to stay curious inside the press box.